Just for myself, I want to go over the last thing about Gilia Reyes in the case of Esther, assuming she was married to Mordechai. Why wasn't she obligated in Mesiris Nefesh, in Yehar Gval Yavla? And this question appears in Masechta Sanhedrin Ayin Dalet Amud Beis. And the Gemara says that Esther was Befarhesia. Everybody knew that she was living with Achashverosh. The Jewish people knew that. And Befarhesia, it should have been Yehar Gval Yavar. Why didn't she give herself to die? And the Gemara answers that Esther was Karka Olam. And then the Gemara gives a second answer, Lanos Atzmo Shaini. Tosus there in Sanhedrin asks, why did the Gemara ask from Rabbi Yochanan? After all, everybody agrees that you have to give up your life for Gilia Reyes, so why do you have to introduce Farhesia here? So Rabbeinu Tam answers that it's a case of Bias Nochri, and there's no Chiv Misan Bias Nochri if not for Farhesia. The Rivam says no, that there's a Chiv Mesiris Nefesh on Bias Nochri, on Bias Akum, like any Erva. But the Gemara understood that Karka Olam Shaini would certainly remove the Chiyuv of Mesiris Nefesh for the Chumras HaVeira of Arayis. But since Rabbi Yochanan added an element of Chil Hashem into the picture, and that's for Hesia, therefore the Gemara needed to teach us that even as far as Chil Hashem, Karka Olam is a mitigating factor. Now, let's talk about the last Gemara we learned yesterday. The Gemara says,
assuming I remember, I think so.
Yeah, I'll review it. The Gemara says that Shnei Gdolei Adar, the Gemara says, Altia Birchas Hejod Kala Beinecha.
Right.
Because Shnei Gdolei Adar, that's Dovin and Daniel, is Bircham Shnei Hedyotos Viniskaima Behem.
Right.
So here in the Yalkut Biurim, he quotes the Marsha. The Marsha is wondering what's going on here. How do we know that Birchas Hejot had the impact here in the cases of David and Daniel? Maybe it was their own schusam. These were tzaddikim. So how do you prove that it's because of the bracha? So the Marsha writes that it's Zevze Gorim. In other words, that tzidkasam and the bracha together, Birchas Hejot, is what protected them. But once again, since you're admitting that it was that tzidkus that plays a role, how do you know? Maybe that was enough to take you from, you know, all the way to the goal line. How do you know that the Birchas Hejot contributed? Maybe it's just that tzidkoskom that alone would have done it or did it. That's what clinched the Yeshua. So he quotes here a whole nother pshat in this sugya from Rabbi Yaakov Emden, the Yavetz. And he says that he wants to interpret the Gemara hafuch. And it's based on a medrash in Shir HaShirim. The medrash says that our mothers, the Imahos, were all akaros. And the reason for that is Shelo Yomru Umos Ha'olam Tfilasenu Asasa Peros. And in this case, Tfilasenu, when the Umos Ha'olam say it was our prayer that accomplished this goal, is a reference to Lavan. Now, Kamash Balan, in the Gemara here, Lafuke Midiriya Medrash. Meaning, what Rabbi Elazar is trying to argue here is against the Medrash. Ein tzorach lachshel shmil kabel berchosa shel goy sheme bavur zeh habrochet is akev milachu. Maybe you would argue that let's not accept a bracha from a goy, from a hejot, because Hashem is going to prevent that bracha from reaching its fruition, because he doesn't want people to say, well, the Umas Olam can claim it's our tefillah that brought about the Yeshua. Says Rabbi Loza, no. Lo tehe birchas hejod kala beinecha, kala miloshen klola. Don't see it as a klola that's going to cause Hashem faker to prevent the kiyum habracha, so that the Umas Olam will not claim credit. And I'll prove to you, because in the case of David and Daniel, there was a bracha, it was a meaningful bracha, despite the fact that maybe somebody will come along and say, well, it's because of their bracha, and if it doesn't, it's mina umas ha'olam. We're not worried about that. The bracha is going to be meaningful. Accept a bracha from a guy, and you don't have to worry that it's going to have some sort of negative quasi-chil Hashem, that people say, well, it was the goyim who did it. And I just want to comment here on this Yaivitz, that it would pay, I don't have the time to research this, to compare this to the question of tzedakah. Are we allowed to take tzedakah from goyim? Because if we do, we run the risk that the goyim are going to claim, and that's how it's going to go down to history, that it's because of us that the Klal Yisrael had a Yeshua. We were the ones who gave them the money, the funds, and supported them.
That's Yechielek's thing's
question, whether you take money from goyim, right? Now the Gemara asks, why is it that Hasach does not bring Esther's response back to Mordechai? His name was deliberately omitted. And the Gemara says it's based on a principle called Ein Meshivin Ala Kalkola. Ein Meshivin Al HaKalkola. Which sounds like, you know, you don't want to be a shliach for something bad. You want to be a shliach for something good. Esther refused to go into the king. And he didn't want to bring back that message, because that kind of shliachus a person doesn't accept, because it has negative repercussions. If that's the pshat in the Gemara, then we're in trouble. Why? Because you don't want to bring bad news. That kind of shlichus you don't want. So why did Hasach agree from the beginning, from the get-go, to bring the words of Mordechai to Esther? I mean, Mordechai was telling Esther the whole parsha of the Gzeres Haman, that he wanted to destroy the Jewish people, and that Hasach was willing to bring to Esther. So why couldn't he bring back a bad report on the way back? And the answer is no. What does Ein Meshivin Al Kalkola really mean? That it's a busha for a shliach to come back to his mishalech and tell him, I did not fulfill your shlichus, I did not accomplish the goal that you had set out for me. So we're not talking about a Kalkola b'etzem Hamaisa, you know, that sometimes you have to be that shliach. But we're talking about a kalkola from the perspective of what the mishalech is going to say when the shliach comes back and he says to the mishalech, I'm sorry, buddy, I tried, but I didn't succeed. That you don't want to do. You'd rather just let it go, and then and the mishalech will figure it out on his own. So therefore, when Mordechai sends a message to Esther about the Tzoras Klal Yisrael, Hasach agrees to bring that message. That's not a kalkola, because the Mishalech wants him to bring those words to Esther, and therefore he, Hasach, wants to fulfill that shlichus. But to bring back to Mordechai the message that Esther's not interested in going into the king, that would mean that the entire shlichus, the whole enterprise, was a big failure. But now he quotes another interpretation, and he says the following, that Ein Meshivin Al Kalkola means a Dover Kalkola Mitzad Atzmo, something that's inherently bad, the bad tidings, you don't want to be the one to bring them, to carry them. But if you'll ask the question, so why did Hasach agree to be Mavir, to bring to Esther the original statement of Mordechai? I mean, that's be'etzem, that's a kalkola, that's a dover ra. And the answer is because Hasach understood that there's a greater good over here. He's going to go and bring these words to Esther. She'll therefore go into the king and reveal her identity, she'll beg on all fours, she'll be miskanim lefon v'lahavris haros havon, and at the end it's going to be a great Yeshua. So that Hasach wants to play a role in something good. Normally bringing bad news is something bad, you know, the recipient is going to get depressed and that's it. I don't want to be the one. Find someone else to do that dirty work. I'm not interested. There's even a shaila if you know about someone who died, whether you're allowed to tell a friend of his, he should know about the funeral, shouldn't know about the funeral. I mean, I would paskin that he should definitely tell him, because otherwise he'll never forgive you for the rest of your life.
Sure.
But I mean to say, in general, there is such a zak, you know, you have to know when, but not to bring bad news to someone. But here, there's a greater good, and Hasach honestly believes that as a result of his shlichus, there's going to be Yeshua for Klal Yisrael, because Esther's going to know what to do. But then Esther refuses to go into the king. Now Hasach realizes, his bar adavar, that lo teitzi mikan Yeshua Yisrael. If Esther's refusing to go in, that's it. It was an aborted effort, and the whole enterprise is a big failure. That's called the Dvar Kalkola. That's called something that's bad, some bad. And that's what he doesn't want to serve as a shliach. I was very impressed with this pshat. Then he quotes a Tosfos Chachmei Anglia. This is a little bit less tzumzach, you know, Hasach lo rotza la'ashev es dvarev mishum sheye'iyah behem kitrug al Am Yisrael. You don't want to fulfill a shlichus when that shlichus just adds a kind of prosecution against the people of Israel. Because she not only indicates that she's not interested in going to the king, but she also mentions that Klal Yisrael may have violated the Chamisha Chumshei Torah. I mean, this is all what you call bitui or dibur shel kitru galami. So that he doesn't want to take a part. Now, Tosis asked Akash, if you remember, when Esther makes that decision to go into the king, right, Kasha Avodati Avodati, why didn't Mordechai just simply give her a get?
Yeah, that's right.
And Tosfos' answer was that if he signs two edim on the get, then the word will get out. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he married her in front of edim, I don't think that's a question. Eric raised that question because that was done way before Esther was on the horizon here. And when Achashverosh met Esther for the first time, she was taken together with all the Naros, you know, for as a candidacy for being queen. Again, you could always ask the question, why did Mordechai agree to do such a thing? Maybe it could be that he had no choice in the matter. I don't know. That has to be studied. Or maybe at that point they weren't married. But suffice it to say that now at this juncture for Mordechai to do such a public act, again, public because of the Edom, and give a get, you know what? The Melech is going to find out that Mordechai is the husband of Esther.
This news gets there real quickly.
Right. So the Rashba has a kasha on Tosfos. There's another sugya in Masechta Gittin called Giresh B'Ksav Yado. And according to at least one opinion, since Ksav Yodah could be verified, it has the same status as two Eidim. Now again, you have to know a lot here. This is Sugya Daf Dalet and Gittin about Ein Dovah Shever V'Pochus Mishnayim. Maybe Ksav Yodah has a Din of a Shtar, and if it has a Din of a Shtar, it's like two Eidim on a Get, and maybe you hold Eidei Chasima Karasi, like Rabbi Meir. Again, there are millions of nuances here, but suffice it to say, for our purposes, the simple bottom line is that the Rashba says if he would have given her a get b'ksav yado, nobody has to know about that. So we learn something interesting from this Rashba and from Tosfos as well, that Mordechai could divorce his wife in order so that later on he could remarry her. And that means that when the Pasuk, you know, we have to reinterpret the parasha a little bit, because in the parasha of Get, the Torah says that a person hates his wife, he's allowed to give her a get. Here Mordechai is not doing it out of hatred, but rather out of love. You know, he wants her to, you know, to still be his wife. So we don't take the pasuk literally that when it says that because he hates her, whatever the case is, therefore he gives her a get, as if to say that's the only time you can give a get. And the reason we emphasize this is because the Minchas Chinuch quotes a shita, a very weird, wild shita, the Maram Yafa, which I can't explain to you, but the Maram Yafa was of the opinion that if a person gives a get, shalom achmas sina, then it has a very limited impact, that get. It cannot be mater ha li alma, because the Torah makes it conditional on the fact that he hates her. So if he still loves her, the get is not valid, except to be mater ha from yibum, from a yavam. Let's say, for example, a man knows that when he dies, his brother, who's out in the, you know, he's incarcerated somewhere in a jail in well, let's call it Soviet Union, all mashallah, and he won't be able to be miyamim, or give, I mean to say, he won't be able to give a chalitza. So there's such a thing as giving a get before you die in order to avoid chalitza. So Maram Yafa says that sugya of giving a get in order to be matir from the yavam, that's only as far as being matir from the yavam. But it doesn't mean that she's no longer an Eishes Ish, because he's doing it out of Ava, and if he gives a get out of Ava, that's not... Oh, Moshe, did you tell me you weren't coming today, or Sunday, that was Sunday? Sunday? Oh, that's Sunday. Okay, I got confused. Yeah.
So he made it?
He made it.
Well, they came in, what, the flight landed?
5 o'clock last.
Right.
The drive from there, we went to the flight.
Yeah. Yeah. It was pretty rough, the weather, yeah. Okay, great. Okay. Now, I still didn't find the time and the concentration to figure out exactly where these 3 days of tidiness were, when they started, when they ended. But in any event, the Gemara points out that they were fasting even on Pesach. So here's a very interesting kasha, very sharp question of Rabbi Yonasan Eibishitz in the Aris Dvash. He says, if the Gemara wanted to emphasize how important this tainus is, that it even trumps the Isur tainus on a yontif, and yesterday we had a discussion about that maybe Mordechai had a bad dream, that Hashem up in Shemaim was going to be Mekayim the Gzeir of Haman, and on the tainus halom you're allowed to fast, whatever it is, this is the fact that they fasted on yontif is relatively small compared to matzah. This is the kasha of Rabbi Yonasan Eibishitz. He's saying if they were fasting on Yontif, then they weren't fulfilling a mitzvah doraisa of matzah. You know, tainus is probably in the worst case scenario a derabbanan, or it's maybe it's a shevi altas, but not
the fast.
No, he said the fast definitely covered the first day of Yontif. Again, all the calculations.
So is matzah only a night, the first night?
Yeah. Right, they fasted 3 days straight, right? So they didn't eat matzah. So on this kasha, we have an Aruch Haner.
That's possible.
The Aruch Haner says the following. Very love the show. The Aruch Haner takes this very seriously. Why the Gemara didn't mention matzah. And he says the following. That tainis, the Gzeira Mordechai of tainis, is miloshan inui. Now, if you take, for example, in the case of Yom Kippur as your paradigm tainis, then the violation of inui, of the tainus of Yom Kippur, is bikei koseves, and koseves is more than a kazayas. So it means that they could eat matzah without violating the gzeir of tainus, because the gzeir of tainus would only be violated in the shear of koseves, which is called yisuvei daita, if I remember the Gemara correctly, at the beginning of the last parak of Yuma. So they ate matzah kimitzvasa. They only ate a kezias. But as far as the tainus is concerned, they weren't in violation of the inui of the tainus, because they didn't eat a kosevis. That's the Aruch Haner. Now the Gemara says that not only did Mordechai create a tainus on a yontif, but he also crossed a river. And there's a whole discussion here about exactly the name of the river. It's called Ubal Uli. I guess that's in Persian. I don't know. Yesh Lahavin. He had to get the word out to the Jews on the other side of the Ubi Uli, or whatever you want to call it. But why is that important for us to know? So he has a pshat here in the name of one of the Sfarim, I'm not familiar with the Sfarim, who says the following. Ibn Ezra writes in Esther that Shushan was divided into two parts. I think a good mashal would be Washington, like you have the city of Washington and you have the capital, you know. So he says there was a capital called Shushan HaBira, and then there was a city called Shushan, which was contiguous to Shushan HaBira. And Shushan HaBira was where the king's palace was, and that's where the king lived and some of the high-ranking officials. But the place where the Megurei HaToshav, that's called Shushan. Mordechai was the only Jew, according to Chazal, who entered into Shushan HaBira, to the capital itself, on a regular basis. I guess Jews weren't allowed there. Now, he doesn't tell you where to find that drasha, so maybe we'll get to it in the Gemara, I don't know. So all the Jews were sitting in Shushan, and Mordechai was separated from the Jews. He was a loner in Shushan HaBira. And that's what the pasuk says, Ish Yehudi Hayu B'Shushan HaBira. Now it gets more profound. He says that between the Bira and Shushan as a city, there was a river by the name of Ubal Uli, and it created a certain isolationism for those who lived in the capital, in the Bira. So it means that this tzaddik, Mordechai, was separated from the people. And kol zman shatzadik levado v'eino meschaber im am Yisrael, if he's not living amongst the people, even if he's a tzaddik, rav, gadol, etc., there still is a midas hadin mesucha olav, meaning a tzaddik is meant to give tochaka, he's meant to influence and inspire the people. Now he's separated from the people. Uvedagdikin achra. And now there's a situation of Klal Yisrael being in extreme danger. And perhaps the tefillos of Mordechai would not be sufficient because he was so separated from the people. He needed to be mischaber ma'am, bechabura achas. And then there would be a kiyum of what Chazal called that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was never mo'ez betefillos rabim. That now Mordechai would link up with the tefillos rabim. And that's based on a pasuk, hen kel kabir v'lo yim'as. And therefore Esther was the one who came up with this etzah that he should cross the Nahar and he should yachnis tatzmo imshara yehudim ayoshim shon val yidei zeh tova yeshua. Fascinating, no? So, you know, that's how I always say, you read a Gemara and I've been asking so many questions on these agaditas because some of them seem so banal and insignificant because we really don't understand the agaditas. I mean, this gives you a whole different perspective here. Od Yesh Lomer, he has another pshat, and we'll have a third pshat coming up around the bend. That's the real pilpul of the pilpul, but these pshat, I think, are closer to pshat. HaYehudim SheYashu Me'efra Nor, he wants to claim, again, this is from Rabbi Yonis and Ivish, it's the second pshat, that they were not part of the Seuda Shel Oso Rosha. Again, I don't know if you can accept that, but that's his chiddush. And therefore, they were not guilty of sin. And nevertheless, they fasted. And that's the significance of Mordechai going over the river, even reaching out to Jews who were not part of the chet, not guilty. The Oz Nechshav Ta'anisam Yoser, the HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that when you're fasting on behalf of other Jews, when you yourself are not guilty, that's even a greater level. It's like Hamispal B'Yad Chavero, right? Is via ora dover rachmei shamayim, and then the tefillah will be very meaningful. So again, whether it's like Mordechai's tefillah would be meaningful because it would be a tefillah's rabbin by his hitztarfus and chibur with the rabbin, or whether or not he wanted to make sure that the Jews would fast even across the river, even though they weren't part of the chet. But now he has a pilpul. Again, I'm not familiar with the sfarim. He says the following. Esther sends a message to Mordechai that he should gather together all the Jews and fast, correct? Now keep in mind, Hasach is out of the picture at this point. So How does Mordechai know that the message that he's receiving is genuine? It's authentic and not counterfeit. Is Kevin Shalom Masas Advarim Bepivshal Peliach? Is therefore she had to find some way of convincing Mordechai that what he's receiving is genuine. So let's say she wrote it down with her own signature. Now at this point, enter stage Zohar. Again, the Zohar is already always Kabbalistic. He says the following. This is mind-boggling. Esther never really had a relationship with Ahasuerus.
Never.
You know about this?
No.
Why? Because kol shehi aisos trichol shamesh im Ahasuerus hichnisa lo shade. Now here he doesn't write the word shade because it's in a feminine form. It's a female shade. It's called a shida. Shida. Bimkoma. It's like a clone kind of thing. So I was wondering if a woman created a clone, would she be allowed to send that clone to have an adulterous relationship with someone else? And the answer is that the clone doesn't have the same status as an Eshesish. So here she sent a Shida. Mordechai now is very confused because he receives a written document and he doesn't know who wrote the document. Perhaps it was the Shida. And why was he very choshesh? Because according to the document, Klal Yisrael would have to violate Yontif by fasting, or maybe by not eating matzah, unless you accept the Aruch HaNer. Oh, so what happens? There's a law with regard to Shadim. This I remember. I think it's a Gemara Brachos that I once learned that the antithetical power against Shadim is water. Water is they melt away. So therefore, she sends a message to Mordechai, and she says, you know what, cross the river on the first day of Yontif and see what happens. Now, Mordechai realizes that, you know, this is a very precarious situation because the shade, Shida, is now playing games with them. They're going to violate the Yontif, they're going to fast, and now up in Shemayim, there's going to be a tremendous kitrug, a prosecution against the Jewish people. They're violating Yontif. That's only going to strengthen Haman. And that's what the Shida wants to do, because the shade comes from the negative part of the world. So what does Mordechai do? He takes this ksav, which he thinks might have been written by a shade, and he's mavirid, he takes it over the water. Oh, so he tells you where the Gemara is. I thought it was in Brachos. He says, Ayin Sanhedrin Pei Zayin, Samach Zion, excuse me, the Maisik Shofim Betalim B'mayim. So whatever's created by a shade is it disintegrates in water. The Kach Haven, and now this test would be so that Im Haksavazeh Nichta Bidei Esther, then it would survive the trip over the water. But if it was written by the Shida, it would disintegrate. And therefore, when he successfully takes it over the river, he now confirms that this is an authentic Ksavyad of Esther. I would love to have that Ksavyad. It's probably worth on eBay. It's probably worth a lot of money. And therefore, he would fast on Yontif. Now, the punchline of this whole thing is that Lefi Zelo Nechluku Rav Ushmuel. You remember that Rav said that this whole business was to fast on Yontif. Shmuel said it was to cross the river. It's all one and the same. Shmuel, Hefir Mordechai is Yontif Arishon B'tainis, but only, that's what his addition to Rav was, I'm not disagreeing with you, Rav, but only after he crossed over the river. Then he agreed to what Rav said, that they would fast. Did we get to the Gemara yet? I just tried to save myself the time of going back and forth. Have we gotten to the Gantt yet about how God creates water? No, we didn't get there. Okay, so I have a nice piece on that. But let's see, let's go on in the Gemara. So we're on Daf Tes Vav Amud Aleph. And we're up to another statement of Rabbi Lazar Omer Rabbi Chanina. Because the first statement was, Altiyah Birchas Hejo Kala Beinech. And now he's saying, Altiyah Kill us, Hejor Kalavei Necha. Share Avimelech Kilel Es Sarah. Right, Sarah, if you remember, concealed the fact that she was a married woman. As a result, she was taken into the Beis HaMelech. And Avimelech suffers from that. There was a terrible punishment. There was Nagoyim and so forth. So he curses her. What was the curse of Avimelech? He says, Hine hu lach ksus einayim. Now, ksus einayim is indication of some sort of a blindness. Even though I'll be pshuto, why did you cover my eyes? Meaning, why did you conceal this information from me? And you never told me that Avram Avinu is your... Avram is your husband. So you caused me all this tsar, all these negoyim, all these punishments, and I would like you to have banim, to have children who are ksus einayim, who are going to be blind. V'niskayim bizarra, and this in fact was fulfilled because her son Yitzchak, vayhiki zokin Yitzchak, vatechena einayim. So Yitzchak becomes blind, or close to blind, at the end of his life. Another statement of Rabbi Lazar, Amar Rabbi Chanina, Bo Urei Shalom Kaminas HaKadosh Baruch Kaminas Basar V'dom. And now the Gemara talks about water, how exactly God creates water. And this is a contrast to human beings. If a human being, for example, is interested in heating up water, right, he wants to cook something in a pot, is midas basar v'dom, adam shofes keder. First he has to put down the pot, puts it on the fire or whatever, and then the akach nosin tocha mayim. I mean, he can't put the water there first because if there's no keder, the water is not going to be suspended in midair. Amal HaKadosh Baruch Hu nosin mayim, God could create water, and it's not even inside the keder yet. The akach shofes hakeder, the water somehow miraculously is suspended in midair. How do I know this? So he quotes a pasuk in Yirmiyahu, L'kayim ha-shenemar l'kol tito hamon mayim v'shamayim, and then it says v'yalin esin. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu first brings the water, and then afterwards yalin esin. Esin is a reference to the clouds, and the clouds are going to carry the water. So God puts the water into thin air, so to speak, which I guess you call shamayim, and then only afterwards the ananim, the clouds will carry the water. So in the back here, he says the following. Hatam Shakosh Bohu Osakem. Again, just looking at the Agadot on a deeper level, why is Hakosh Bohu doing this very strange trick? I mean, who's he trying to impress? Is the following. There's halacha here, I don't mean halacha literally, but a principle of Hanhogas HaOlam. And that is Kedei Lahanigas HaOlam, Kamo Shahoya B'Sheshes Yimei Breshes, B'Briyas HaOlam. In other words, the way that God operates in this world is always going to be a mirror image of how He created the world originally. And the pasuk says, "Breishis bar Elokim es haShamayim." Shamayim are the waters from up on top. So the waters come down from the Elyonim, what we call V'achikach, and then it says V'es haOretz. That's what we call the Tachtonim. For example, if you take a look in Tehillim, it says, "Ein kamocha kelokim." Rashi says, Shehikdamta Elyonim L'Tachtonim. So Elyonim have to come first, and then Tachtonim second. That's the way it works in this world. I think in Chassidus, if I'm not mistaken, this is called the Sarusa D'Lielo. Did you ever hear that phrase? Anyway, Kachu Adover Gam V'Eis Hanagoso Es Ha'olam, Shakadosh Baruch Hu Maktim Es Elyonim L'Tachtonim. So the idea that the water is there first means the water coming down from the heavens, and only then you put the kedera, which is symbolically representative of Tachtonim. And that means that, like for example, you're familiar with the concept that Shabbos is kvi v'kaima?
Yeah.
Right? What that means is that it's pure Elyonim. You know, we don't determine when the Shabbos is. And that means that the highest level of Kedusha always starts up in Shamayim. And the Kedusha comes from Shamayim. Again, that's my own addition. And he's quoting here the Sifsei Chachamim. I have to do my research. I used to know the name of the Sifsei. It's not the same Sifsei Chachamim on Rashi on Al HaTorah. Now the next Agadot is very, very famous, and we all know it by heart. Om Rabbi Lozo, Rabbi Chanina. And this one is not just a tradition, as we saw before, Rabbi Lozo, the name of Rabbi Chanina, but this one is really relevant to Megillas Esther. Kol HaOmer Dov B'Shem Omer Mevi Ge'ula Li'olam Shenemar Vatomer Esther LeMelech B'Shem Mordechai. So that's the whole story of Bigson of Seresh, these two Sarisim who wanted to kill the king. And since she revealed to Mordechai the name to Achashverosh the name of Mordechai, and it was written down in the record book of the Sefer Zichronos that Mordechai was one who saved the king, that ultimately brings about the Geula, and that's called Mevi Geula Li'ola. So there's an interesting kasha here in the Achronim, because this exact statement, which is Amoraim, I mean, we're talking about Rav Lazar, appears in a Mishnah, word for word. The Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, Perek Vav, Mishnah Vav, says, Kala Omer Dov B'Shem Omro, maybe Gul Yola, and derives it from Esther. So what's the Chiddush of Rav Chanina? Just to repeat what it says in a Mishnah, word for word? So the Rasha claims that the Mishnah in the sixth Perek of Avos, as opposed to the first five, is only Brisos. Right. And at the time of the Amoraim, they didn't have access to the Brisos, or not all the Brisos. Right? Each Amora had his Brisos that he brought. Like Tanya, the Rav Yosef had his Brisos. But that really doesn't answer the question, because Ravina Rav Ashi, who were the authors of the Shas, I mean, they were the editors, why did they bring this memra that we have already in the Mishnah? It's at the time of Ravina Rav Ashi, they had the Mishnais in Avos, even the Brises of Avos, even Perek Vav. So he wants to say the following, that the reason why this statement is quoted here is simply to shed a light on what came before this, to be mashlim, a statement in the Agadah that we had earlier. You may remember that Rabbi Chanina said that a tzaddik, when he dies, is to be compared to a margalit sha'avda, like a pearl that was lost. And kishem sha'margalit lo nifsedes ba'avedasa, now, it's, even after it's lost, the pearl still remains a beautiful pearl. It's just that we lost it. So too, when a tzaddik dies, he didn't lose anything because he's going straight to the right place. But it's a hefsek for the world, for us, because we need the tzaddik. So now we're left with the following question, which this statement is going to come to an answer, called maybe Omer Dov B'Shem Omro. How could it be that the mashal of Rav Chiya is appropriate? In the case of a margalit, nothing happens to it. It's, maybe it's at the bottom of the sea, but it's still a beautiful margalit. But in the case of a tzaddik who dies, well, we know that a person who dies can no longer fulfill Torah mitzvahs, ma'isim tovim, he can no longer be zocha to anything, that's it. So why do you say it's not a loss for the tzaddik himself? Ella, the answer is because of Talmidim. Kasher oskim haTalmidim b'divrei Rabam ba'olam hazeh, when a person, a tzaddik, leaves this world and he leaves behind him a legacy, and the Talmidim were going to pass on that legacy, v'omrim shmuos b'shmo, is garmim heim lolis ala. So it's not like it's all frozen. You know, we understand that death is final and that's it. You know, whatever you achieved, finito. That's not true. You still have his alus even after death, and that's through the Talmidim. I always say to myself, I ask myself the following question, maybe you'll have a different answer to this question than I have. Which person who lived on this world has the most Talmidim ever? You know, in Ripley's, believe it or not, he would get the prize. I thought the answer is Rashi. I mean, is there anyone on the face of the earth, since Rashi, who could say he's not a Talmud of Rashi? Ashkenazim, Sephardim, Yemenites, I don't care who you have, you know? So imagine that a person has so many Talmidim. And that's what the Gemara wants to say, that this is not a total hefsek when he dies. He's still like a margalit, he's still shining. And Ravina Ravashi took the memra here and they put it right here to say that Omer Dov B'Shem Omro, to tell you that when you say something in the name of a Chacham, he doesn't lose anything with his death. Now there's a Medrash Tanchuma in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, Kol she'eino Omer Dover B'Shem Omro, Olav HaKosev Omer Al Tigzol Dal Ki Dal Hu. So it's unbelievable that the Medrash is now taking it on the flip side. Not only is it a positive Mevi Gula Liolam, but keep in mind that if you don't mention his name, which I think we call plagiary or whatever word you want to use, plagiarism, right? That's called Gzela. And there's a famous work called the Sefer HaChassidim, and he writes that he violates the law of Lotasiges HaGvul. Now, what happens if a person hears something from an intermediary, right? He hears it al yidei ish emtza'i, sha'amal lo b'shem omra. Kasher omra osol acherim, tzarch li omra gam b'shem emtza'i. It's not enough that he says, well, I heard in the name of Reb Chaim, but I heard from my father in the name of Reb Chaim. That's how the Rav used to always talk, right? V'tzarch adam kishu shomer dover lomar osol b'shem omra, afilu mishlishi shal alocha. And that's why you find things in Shas sometimes I laugh at. You know, I really, it's almost like a galech. You know, the three lines until you finally get to the few words that he said, but he traces the whole chadgadya. Hasgula ba miras dover b'shem omra lo migul olam. I'm hoping he's going to quote the Maral. There's a famous Maral on this. No, he's quoting the Sifsei Chachamim. He gam kasher omer osa noch linochri. Even when he's talking to a guy, right? That's the case of Achashverosh. Is kol sheik shomer osa li Yisrael. Kmo chen hashomer dvar halacha o chachma o musar minochri. If he hears something chachma musar minochri, ayah the word halacha. Take out the word halacha. Right? Chachma musar minochri. Gam kein tzarch li omer b'shem anochri. Anyway, there's a very famous Maral about what Geula means, and Geula means going back to the source, and that's why if you go back to the source of who said the originally the idea, that's going to bring about the Geula. L'chora ma shevach ha'otzam hazeh l'hovi Geul yolam. What's the great shevach? After all, a person doesn't want to steal something. So Esther says it in the name of Mordechai. Ma'o shehu mimemches kinyoni haTorah. The last one is Om Medom B'Shem Omro, and that's the mission that we mentioned, or the Brice at the end of Amos. Ma'gdul yesh b'zeh. Why is the Gemara making, Chazal making such a great deal? Like, what's the challenge? You know, what's the... He says, Efshel farash al piyam avur b'gemar. I don't have a problem with this question because it is a great challenge. You know, it's very hard to constantly train yourself to always mention, you know, Echav Gehert, you know, I heard it from so-and-so. El Efshel farash al piyam avur b'gemar b'sanhedrin shekol dover shenigla l'navi is no del gam l'naviyam acherin. So whatever comes down from on high to one particular Navi now becomes accessible to all the Naviim. V'kan, Mordechai Yoda, Shemiritzonam Shalbiksam Viserish Al Yidei Ruach HaKodesh. How did he know that they were doing this? Because he had Ruach HaKodesh. And the Gemara back on Dav Zion at the very beginning of the Sagadata says that how do we know that Esther was Ruach HaKodesh? Because it says, Vayivoda Adovel Mordechai. So it must be that he knew about it through Ruach HaKodesh. I'm a little confused here because the Gemara says that he knew 70 languages. So I don't know how to reconcile that, if you have an idea. But for Esther, Shehoisa Mishiva HaNeviyos, Yoda Gamki Minavuazu. Because once it came down from the heavens to Mordechai, then she as a Neviyah knew exactly what Mordechai do. V'chol Lomar B'Shem Atzma. She had the Nevuah straight from Hashem. She had access to it. Even though she could have gotten away with it technically by saying it in her own name because she got the Nevuah, nevertheless she said it in his name. Because of this great act, etc. Omar, the Omar. Here it's printed twice, the Omar Omar. This is just a printing mistake here. Okay. The Omar of Lozar, Omar of Chanina, Tzadik Ovad. Oh, this we spoke about before, Lidoro Ovad. I mean, the Aveda, the loss of the Tzadik is for the generation, but not for the Tzadik himself. Mm-hmm. He's going to a good place. Marshal Yodam Shavdal of Margolis. Kolbakam Shi Margolis Shma, wherever it is, it's beautiful, it's chashiv, it doesn't get destroyed, it doesn't spoil, but Lo Avda El Labaila gets lost to the person who owns it. And so too the people own the tzaddik, so to speak. It doesn't mean they physically own the tzaddik, but it means that they benefit from the tzaddik. And if the tzaddik leaves, they lost their margolit, they lost their beautiful pearl. Haman tells over the whole story about Kvodo, the Oshro, to his family, and then he adds the following comment. He says, Kol Zayn is Shovel Li. This isn't worth a dime for me. And I'll read to the end of the pasuk. It says, B'chol Ace, Asher Niroes Mordechai Yehudi Yoshe B'Shar Mil. On Rav Loz, on Rav Chanina, that's familiar to us. B'shasha Ra, Haman is Mordechai Yoshe B'Shar Milach. What irked Mordechai? And you might say it's the fact that, I'm sorry, what irked Haman? You might say it's the fact that Mordechai refused to bow down to him. No. That's not what it's all about.
Famous question.
Haman, he declares, Kol ze eino shove li. What's the significance of Kol ze eino shove li? Haman sees Mordechai, and he's not machshuv all the kavod that he got. I mean, kavod and osher and all the wealth. So what's bothering him about this little yidl Mordechai? What does he care about a Jew with bud and payas? Like, what's the whole thing? And he says, Kol zeh ein shovel. Ein shovel, he sounds like it's not worth anything in the marketplace, some financial question. And the answer is Kidur Rav Chisda. The Omar Rav Chisda, zeh bavur prosbeli. And now we turn to the Aftes Vav. Zeh bavur prosbeti. So prosbeli is called osher, is wealth. And that's what Mordechai is saying to Haman, that I'm going to tell you about my wealth. And then Haman comes in front of Mordechai with anivs, with poverty. And all these words are words that indicate shtaros, you know, documents that let's say if a person owes a great deal of money, so that document records that and it indicates that he's a poor person because he owes so much money. And then there's a shtar that indicates that a person has a massive amount of wealth. You know, today's day, I guess if you have such a shtar, you can get a mortgage or whatever you want to do with that shtar.
Line of credit.
You have credit, you get a line of credit. So what's this all about? What does it mean that every time Haman saw Mordechai, he reminded himself of this shtar, which is called the shtar anivs? So on this, we have to look at the Yalkut Biurim because he has a medrash. The medrash says the following. Pam achas, nosan ha-melech mamon le-Mordechai v'Haman. Ahasuerus gave out a certain significant sum of money, one sum for Mordechai, one for Haman. V'shigron b'roshe gaisos, which if I understand correctly, it means, you know, you have to set up a battalion, and you have to, there are a lot of expenses, you know, you need camps, and you need clothes, and you need uniforms, and so forth, and armor. Lichvosh es ha-medina, there was a certain medina, he doesn't tell you exactly which medina, and they were in charge of divvying up the money and creating a military campaign. So Haman, not al Haman is a Haman shekim, but viachlo, and he consumed it. You know, he used the money for his own benefit. Lo yishtar mimenu ma'uma, he didn't leave anything else. And now it's time for him to implement some sort of military campaign. He doesn't have any money; he's penniless. Lo hayu biyado klum. Lumaso Mordechai shomer es hakesef. He used only what was absolutely necessary for himself, and the rest of the money he had to fulfill the king's agency. In other words, to set up the military campaign. Bar Haman Eitzel Mordechai. Right, this is, I guess, early in the career. Ubiksho, and he said to him, Halveni Mamon Zesha Biyad. Can you give me a loan? This is so weird, you know, that the whole story that nobody knows about. At least I didn't know about it. Amar lo Mordechai. Mordechai says, Eini Malavcha Elim Kein Timchar Li. Es nafshcha li eved. I want you to be willing to sell yourself to me as an eved. Hiskim Haman l'kach, he had no choice. Hilveyu. V'kasev lo shtar. And Haman writes a shtar to Mordechai. Harei Haman avdo shel Mordechai. Shekei mochar lo es atzmo bavur kikros lechem. So he can buy bread for the armies. So every time Haman looks in the face of Mordechai, he's reminded of the shtar. maybe Mordechai would wave the shtar in front of his face, I don't know. And this was a tremendous a sense of, on Mordechai's part, that really whatever he has, he doesn't really own it, because he's an Eved, Mashakana Eved Kana Rabba. And therefore, Kol Zayin is Shavuli. His Nechasim aren't worth anything to him, because he doesn't really own them. Omar Papa, the Karule, Avda de Mizdavan Bitalmi. So the Brios, the people on the street, had a certain phrase for Haman as a result of the Mechira that he sold himself as an Eved. And they said, an Eved who sells himself for Kikros Lechem, his Mechira Lamardachai was for Kikros Lechem, because he didn't have money to pay for the army and so forth and support them. And that's what they said about Haman. So obviously Haman's great wealth is not really so wealthy. He's not as wealthy as he. I just wanted to see what we were holding in the clock.
It's 8:20.
Oh, 8:20. Okay, so we're up to Omar Av Papa. And Emir Hashem, I wish you all a great Shabbos. I'll see you later. And then again, I'll wish you a great Shabbos. But we're up to Omar Av Papa here on Daf Tes Zayin, Tes Vavam and Beis. Hopefully making some progress in the